Well, at least we're still unbeaten. Anyway, the Wales Week Drive Morning Edition is what you're listening to at present, and the weather is gorgeous. High of 17 degrees centigrade, low of 10 degrees centigrade, a cloudy start with some rain, which will clear to give a breezy day with some sunny spells. How does that chime with Gibraltar, Gabriella?
Well, we're quite clear, currently 21 degrees, so tomorrow might be a chance of rain, so it might turn for us, but all right for now.
And when it turns in Gibraltar, well, who knows?
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Just in case you thought Gabriella had forgotten the ident and Frodo would be most upset. Incidentally, Ben, in case you think we've gone all Lord of the Rings with respect to Gibraltar, yeah, perhaps you'd like to sort of find out what exactly Frodo is.
Yeah, I haven't seen Lord of the Rings.
Oh.
It's quite bad, I know.
It's just a shock. I know.
One for the list.
Sometimes. The shock revelations that Midweek Drive out folk provide, it's amazing.
Yeah. Can't get the staff these days.
Well, just not seen Lord of the Rings.
I know what a Frodo is, I just don't know what a Frodo is.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's quite right. I mean, you know, if anything was worth an international comment in the Gibraltarian Chronicle, surely that has to be breaking news, Gabriella.
Of all the people you could pick, did you pick me?
I don't know about the Hobbits.
Anyway, it's fair to say Frodo with Gabriella is not a hobbit, a little dog. Okay?
Okay. Small dog. That's fine, that's covered.
Specifically, species is?
He's a pug.
He's a pug, exactly. So there we are. So not too dissimilar from a hobbit after a fashion, really. If any hobbits listening, don't worry, we'll be getting ourselves sorted out from there. Okay, so I don't think you've had. Have you, Hannah, have you spoken to Gabriella before?
I think she's been on when I've been on the Morning Edition.
Because you're now, of course, that would have been when you were a level one journalism student. Now,
summer ago.
Level two, and indeed merited of a ident just for yourself.
Hannah Brown, historic Harwich heroine and hyperbolic midweek drivette.
I'm not quite sure about the hyperbolic, but I thought, we'll put it in there. It's good. It gets the H factor going. Don't worry, Ben, I'm still working on yours.
Thank you.
Come, just happen. Anyway, there you go. So any questions you want to put for Gabriella, who, of course, graduated, what was it, 2 or 3 years ago? 4 years ago?
2 years ago. I'm not that old. 2 years ago.
There we are. 2 Gibraltarian years ago.
Wow. Yeah. So does uni feel like a long time ago already, with just 2 years?
Yeah, it does actually, because 2 years ago is already more than half the time I would have spent in uni. So it goes by really quick. Enjoy it while you can. And it's not too bad working anyway. But have fun. Especially this week. Is it still fresh?
No, that was last week. As you know, Gabriella, last week, with the joys of Welcome Week, to use the new political correct term for Freshers Week, of course, despite the freshers flu we were alluding to yesterday, it's very much a case of, I think, everybody now settled down to hard work, haven't they, Ben?
A great mix.
As they just say. just like that. So, Ben often responds with a kind of great mix of music. It's just the way forward.
Yeah, even in I've been told I've got a big mouth.
did it cast your own? I mean, did you sort of have any nostalgic sort of tugs last week, Ben, when you sort of thought, oh, I remember when I sort of went through the Lincoln threshold for the first time?
Yeah, well, it's gone quite quickly, I think. It's just one big hangover first year, isn't it, really? You should use that quote for the drink awareness bit later on.
Shouldn't be saying that on radio.
It's a whole new sort of feeling. Anyway, speaking of finance, Gabriella, should I pay or should I go? The line that we're actually focusing on here. We'll be speaking in about 15, 20 minutes or so to Nicola Longfield, who's Director of Small and Medium Business for PayPal UK and Ireland. And apparently more and more small businesses are lagging behind and restricting payment options. So, Hannah, have you ever been in a store where you wanted to pay for something, but you've only wanted to pay your way, and if they couldn't accommodate that, you've said, I'm sorry, I'm going to go?
Well, I've never left. I normally try and carry my card and some cash, because I know sometimes, depending on the shop you go to, either they don't allow you to pay by card, or they might have a problem with technology, because obviously that always happens. So I always try and be prepared.
So you're not somebody who would quit at the till, then?
No.
Ben, have you ever quit at the till?
Not yet. I mean, there's times, obviously, when I've been when they ask you to pay a little charge on the side for cards, say 50p on the side.
They all mount up, of course.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I used to carry cash. I was more of a cash person, but I'm more of a card person now, just the convenience of a card.
And Gabriella, in Gibraltar, is it just a case of you still barter in terms of coconuts? I'm sorry, I couldn't resist it. Carry on.
We don't even have coconuts. there are some places that don't accept card. It's usually lunchtime places. So if you're going to get like a quick roll, they won't obviously accept your card. So I just always have cash on me.
Perhaps again you shouldn't say that live on radio in case you have any Gibraltarian people say, it's all right, Gabriella always carries cash.
They won't follow me around the street. But I have seen people walk out of shops. Because they won't accept card.
Yeah. I mean, it's useful, obviously, for tourists and other sort of areas to be aware of that. Anyway, we'll find out about more to do with that in a few moments. Richard Fitzwilliams will be talking about the Magnificent Seven. I don't think he's going to like it somehow. I mean, after his scathing commentary on the Ben-Hur scenario.
I've heard good things about it. I want to see it.
Maybe the 1959 one, current one. Generally.
Yeah.
Anyway, that'll be fine. So, Gabriella, what are you going to be doing for the rest of the day?
I have a few events. There's a coffee morning this morning for Cancer Relief, so I'll be heading over there. And there's, I think there's a few other check presentations and things that I need to get going to. Yesterday was an interesting day because Gibraltar opened its first chemotherapy suite. So no longer will we have to travel to the UK or Spain to have treatment.
Excellent. This is good news. So, marvellous stuff.
Good news.
They don't report that in the Sky News headlines. There's a positive. We carry on regardless. Anyway, Hannah, any other questions or queries you'd like to put to the aforementioned Gabriella Peralta?
Yeah. Are you doing anything interesting this weekend? Saying you got a coffee morning today. Anything else interesting this weekend?
Which, of course, is like only a matter of 48 hours away.
Yeah.
I mean, she could get on a jet plane and actually attend Lincoln Lights tomorrow and the Sonophilia Festival and all sorts of. She'd make a return to Lincoln, really. In fact,
yeah.
I'm amazed she doesn't sometimes do that. It's just the way. She's got very quiet.
I haven't actually planned my weekend. I will probably spend one night with a takeaway.
Sounds good.
I don't know. I just decide on the day.
You've got to go with the flow.
Unless I've got something that I have to go to. Yeah. Like, I think last weekend I went to Mr. Gibraltar, which was a pageant for males.
Yeah.
For work, obviously.
Yeah,
but I don't have any events this weekend.
After all the essays she used to write about objectification and various other bits and pieces, now she's actually going to report on Mr. Gibraltar.
If you can objectify women, you can objectify men.
So,
it was the first ever as well.
And was there a swimsuit competition there?
It was underwear competition, much to the surprise of the entire audience.
I mean, Ben, suddenly I just feel as though, you know, our fellow males had just let us down.
Which they opted for the contestants. It wasn't
Well, they would say that, wouldn't they? You know, that's the whole thing. It's just beefcake in a whole new world, seriously. Anyway, what the heck. Gabriella, it's time for Ben Lewis to put those last two questions to you.
Oh, I've got to try and remember them now. Will you be joining us again?
Yeah, whenever Alex wants.
And have you enjoyed your experience today?
Yeah, of course I have.
It's always important, you see.
I nailed it.
Across the alphabet. It's absolutely. I knew it would get there in
it's
the end.
It's been a while.
Okay, fine. So the Stranglers and Skin Deep having their own little challenges there, as indeed possibly Mr. Computer is, but hopefully unchallenged and ready to actually unveil delightful things. We have the Fitzwilliams. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
So that's what we like to hear, stuff, and working, you know, positively well. Quick introduction, of course, in the studio. We have Hannah Brown and Ben Lewis.
Hello, Hannah and Ben.
Good morning.
Hello.
Ben actually came up with an outrageous statement a few moments ago saying he's heard good things about Ben-Hur.
Not Ben-Hur, Magnificent Seven.
Oh, I'm glad. Yes, that is. It's an important difference, Alex, you know. I mean, the Magnificent Seven, he's heard good things because actually it does deliver. I mean, we know the story was immortalized by the famous Japanese director Akira Kurosawa in The Seven Samurai, absolutely brilliant, one of my favorite films. And then, of course, we had the classic adaptation by John Sturges in 1960, set in Mexico. So they say, why remake it? And the answer is simply that Antoine Fuqua, a very erratic director, remember King Arthur, his successful Train, Franklin, Denzel Washington should have won for American Gangster. I wasn't that impressed with it. But here, lots and lots of cliches, but it delivers as being a very entertaining, action-packed movie. I have to say, in the beginning, set in the 1870s, the evil industrialist Bartholomew Bogue, played by Peter Sarsgaard, burns the church of the mining town of Rose Creek and kills several innocent citizens because he intends to take full control. So in desperation, the widowed Emma Cullen, played by Hayley Bennett, hires seven gunmen who rescue the town from Bogue's henchmen. I have to say, they come into the town and dispatch over 20 of them, one per bullet. I thought if it's going to be like this, especially with Bogue so unsubtle, Sarsgaard really hams it up. This is a son of Satan, if ever there was one. Well, what is this movie going to offer? Well, we have the gunman, of course, training the citizens in self-defense and awaiting the inevitable attack by Bogue's army. And it's a diverse lot this time. An American bounty hunter, played by Denzel Washington, he has got the brooding presence. He's in command. There's a Hispanic bandit, there's an Oriental assassin, there's a Comanche, there's a tracker, there's an ex-Confederate marksman played by Ethan Hawke, and a gambler played by Chris Pratt. And they're hired by a woman, hence the diversity and hence more contemporary relevance, if you like. But what we've got, despite a lot of dialogue which is inaudible and a certain amount of wisecracking camera-dy, which is great fun, and the set of the town of Rose Creek looks like one, my goodness gracious me, it does. Too many extras resembling caricatures as well, but, and here's the but, the action does deliver. I mean, visually, Fuqua really seems at home in the Wild West, and the climactic action sequence, explosions, vast cavalry charges, it's done at terrific pace, and it's extremely enjoyable. And it does show freedom sometimes has to be fought for, and you're left in absolutely no doubt that war is hell because of the shots of the town when there's been absolute carnage. What I like particularly, have to say, it leaves you upbeat, and that is that they play homage to the original by playing the soundtrack at the end. Now, that does work.
Well, without Elmer Bernstein's classic Magnificent Seven number, then I think, okay, I might be persuaded because I was
quite
concerned about that.
It's not bad at all. It's got as many cliches and flaws as you, well, you'll find plenty to criticize if you want to, but it is very entertaining. It's giving it the wild screen treatment and Denzel Washington exceptionally good performance.
Well, let's look at the positive side of things. Ben Lewis, would you be seeing or checking out The Magnificent Seven?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely love the old ones. And ironically, I don't know if I should tell you this, but I've been doing some of the work over the summer on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you been doing?
So I did my placement with Sony for the last, well, for 6 weeks.
Right, a specialist in it, yes.
Yeah, yep. I mean, not just that, but several other films as well. But this was one of the highlights.
Better than Angry Birds? I can't say that. And obviously, you can't pass on the comment. But
no.
I do have to say, it's pretty brave to try and remake it, but it does show there's no reason why not, so long as it's an enjoyable movie.
I think it's sort of reminiscent, people sort of taking people back, but also a bit more of a modern-day version.
Oh, well, I mean, much more diverse. In fact, you couldn't find it easily more diverse than this. I do have to say some of it is very silly, because when the gunmen who've been hired already meet the Comanche, not only does the war paint look a little false, but the way he shares the heart of a deer instantly, well, they're pretty lucky. Frankly, it's the Oriental Assassin's rather fun. Ethan Hawke's ex-Confederate marksman, well, I mean, not a bad performance, but very much based on Stanley Baker's Butcher of Barcelona in The Guns of Navarone. He loses his nerve. Interesting, it's Itchen who holds it together when it comes to acting, and Hawke's not bad. But also, it does give of tutouts, and that climactic battle is marvellous. Also, the guns, the sweep, the epic nature of it. Yes, yes, he's more at widescreen in this movie than I thought he would be.
Good stuff. Let's progress. Of Hannah, would you see The Magnificent Seven?
Well, I don't know if I'll go see it in the cinema, but it's definitely one I'll look out to watching at some point, because it does sound interesting. And I do like the actor Chris Pratt. He's, you know, the films he's been in, I've enjoyed.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes, he plays a gambler, and yes, very likable. Very likable.
So let's move on to all of this and more. Is it H.G. Wells' Things to Come, or is it something completely different you've gone for?
Well, there's nothing to do with H.G. Wells in this, but it's a really powerful story, and may I recommend this film, because directed by Mia Hansen-Love, it shows that my focus is on a character, main character played by Isabel Huppert. Now, she's ever reliable and she's a remarkable actress, but this is one of her best roles. And we meet her as a thoughtful, sensitive person. She's pretty apolitical. She was once a communist. She's married. The marriage isn't deeply passionate, but she believes it works. She's got a mother who she's trying to help, but the mother is, in fact, declining and also wants attention at all hours. That makes it very difficult for her to teach her classes. And also, she's written some textbooks that she's negotiating with her publishers who want to update them. Not something she's keen on. And this is how an individual copes when her world starts to collapse. How she copes with divorce, how she copes with her mother's decline, how she copes also with a friendship, which is rather a tricky one, with an ex-pupil. And it's absolutely marvellous. It's a life-affirming film because she's getting older. She's finding also that her textbooks, her work is not what is required these days. She's finding her students on strike, and she's also finding difficulties in connecting with Fabienne, played by Roman Kalinka, who is someone she was very fond of, but when she goes to stay fleetingly at his commune, problems arise. And as for her husband, fine performance there. One has to say that you've got someone who's also an academic, but deeply egotistical. If you marry someone called Heinz, perhaps you're asking for it. I have to say.
No, that's a bit harsh on 57 Varieties, but let's not worry
about that. Well, yes, you're right. Edith Scobe as the mother, I mean, again, somebody who exists for herself. She's coping with selfishness. She's coping with difficulties that, for someone who's thoughtful and someone who's so much to give, both in the classroom and also in her personal life, who, in fact, actually wants it? What's she coming to terms with? The fact that she's advancing years. I mean, one critic compared her performance going forward 10, 15 years, perhaps, to Emmanuel Reber in a movie with Jean-Louis Trintignant, which literally forces you to come to terms with death, and that is Amour. I mean, that's a harsh comment, but this is a very, very intelligent movie, and Huppert's absolutely superb. And you're drawn in, you're totally sympathetic with the character. You're wondering what's going to go wrong next and how she's going to cope with it. She's a philosopher and practices what
she... Well, maybe she's just a stoic, Richard. Maybe it's a case of you having to come to grips with that whole scenario. You know, soldiering through the death of your mother, getting fired from your job, dealing with a husband who's cheating on her. It's just day in the life of many sort of folk. Hannah, is this something you would sort of consider going to see Isabel Huppert in Things to Come or L'Avenir?
Yes, it sounds very interesting. Richard has sold it to me with his description of the film.
I would have been more Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, but never mind. Ben?
It's a nice film, but it's not at the top of my list. I think I've got
a
big list at the minute.
Is it a foreign language film?
No. I mean, the storyline is absolutely amazing, I think, but it's just more of an action person.
Not quite in The Magnificent Seven.
It has very little in common with The Magnificent Seven, I do have to confess.
Well, that's fairly traumatic for the people who are going through the whole thing, surely, you know, in comparative terms.
Well, I mean, you've got a sensitivity, you've got the fact the film is... It's beautifully observed. Andrei Markov, for example, her husband, who's fallen in love with someone else, and in fact, ratted on her, frankly. No question at all. It's an extraordinary performance. It's a study in a certain form of egotism, whereby he simply does what he wants to, just leaving her stranded. I mean, life is moving away, as in her own field, they require other textbooks with different sorts of colours. On the cover, a hilarious scene where she's with her publishers trying to convince her to, as it were, liven up her work. But what is so wonderful about this movie is that it has such integrity. I was absolutely gripped by it. The dialogue is so superb. You're not thinking of it as dialogue. This is, in fact, something without contrivance. You certainly wouldn't say that for a Magnificent Seven, but then part of the joy of the Magnificent Seven was that it is contrived and is a milder story, but it's something that I was so involved in. What about a mother who quite deliberately tries to wreck her daughter's career because she wants somebody with her all day, so she gets constant messages. She'll even call the fireman and pretend there's a fire. I mean, it's Edith Scobe, a wonderful study of selfishness.
Interesting as ever. Richard, you've got 2 minutes left. Do you want to squeeze in one last little thought in terms of the cultural creativity aspects of life?
Well, I'd say that there's a very interesting, as you know, Duke and Duchess of Cambridge, and we'll soon see photographs of George and Charlotte at a children's party in the Royal Tour of Canada.
There are people saying there are other members of the Middleton entourage you could have actually seen photographs of, but that's another issue entirely.
Totally different, very, very different, but the visit to British Columbia and UConn, and I've been fascinated where they're reading a lot about Canada's unconventional Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and his glamorous wife Sophie Gregoire, and I think that they've got on exceptionally well. I loved Kate's Jenny Packham outfit when she arrived. She looked glorious in blue and a lock hat with a maple leaf. So I mean, that's absolutely perfect fashion. She really does deserve to have the Kate effect, because that helps our fashion, and just as Sophie Trudeau promotes Canada's fashion, you know, we have a real ambassador there, and the Cambridges, I think, have done wonderfully well. The weather hasn't been entirely kind. I mean, it's a very different sort of tour. In 2011, from Canada Day to Calgary, they had this marvellous tour for 9 days, and then they went to Hollywood. This is giving them parts of Canada, which, you know, it's a country that's very close to the crown. The Queen's been there 22 times. It's had royal visits since 1876. The most famous one in 1939 was pre-war, and that was somewhat iconic. It began the Royal Walkabout in 1991. The St. Princess of Wales were there with William and Harry. But this is going tremendously well, and the visuals, the
images. It's clearly a winner, you know, in many ways.
Clearly a winner. Clearly a winner.
Kate Middleton to Cambridge, what Hannah Brown is to Harwich, or indeed Ben Lewis to
just
Brighton.
Just wait, the images of the children's party where we'll see George and Charlotte enjoying herself. Remember, George had such fun in the Antipodes.
Richard, I'm not interested. Okay, I'm
what
sorry.
What about George the Bilby in Taronga Zoo?
But please, you know, I just, you know, we think they're wonderful folk, and if they want to do a midweek drive, that's fine, but please, Ben, I don't know. Are you fascinated?
Are you sure?
I've really known you speechless. You've almost
indeed.
Up on okay. It comes to George and Charlotte.
You could please, exactly. There's only a certain amount of material you could honestly take. Hannah, last two questions for Richard, please.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
Enormously.
And will you be joining us again soon?
I hope so, certainly.
Association. Windy. Pretty much in keeping with the weather today, which is going to be breezy with sunny spells. Should I pay or should I go? As we said at the first part of the programme when talking with our Gibraltarian correspondent, it seems that people are quitting at the till because they can't pay the way they want. Hannah, of course, in the studio, you have never done that. You always like to have some sort of balance of cash. Ben, have you ever quit at the till?
Never quit. No, never quit.
But again, have moved more into a card scenario. To address the impact in terms of small and medium business with respect to this survey by PayPal, we're delighted to welcome the director of Small and Medium Business for PayPal UK and Ireland, the fantastic Nicola Longfield. Good morning, Nicola. How are you? Hello, Nicola. I don't know. You do these little pieces and then suddenly, whoosh, it all sort of vanishes away in terms of life and various other bits and bobs. Okay, fine. I think it looks as though we're going to have another musical break. I shall have to work on a whole different introduction to the whole sort of sequence. Maybe we should actually look for money to work our way through that. What do you think, Hannah? Do you think that might be some sort of way in which we, you know, a sort of cash scenario there? Not that I'm intimating that in any way, shape or form that the Siren FM presenters are intermittent in any kind of bung scenario here. But we'll look at that. Actually, Nicola, are you there? Can you hear us? No, clearly not.
For free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money. That's what I want. That's what I want. That's what I want. Your love gives me such a thrill.
And hopefully, with a little bit of money and good fortune, we can say, Nicola Longfield, are you with us? This is very, very surreal, because clearly we are hoping that Nicola will actually be there. I believe that she can actually hear us. Previous calls of this. Hey-ho!
Everything, it's true. What it don't get, I can't use. I want money.
I do know that the fabulous technical engineer at the other end is working very hard to hopefully connect in various ways. Hopefully, Nicola, you can actually hear us now. We can hear you. Is that okay?
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we're getting a bit of echo, so I think some of the various other bits and pieces have come through, but at least we can communicate. Nicola.
Good morning.
Yeah, excellent. Good to connect with your good self. Challenges emerge in the most wondrous of ways. Anyway,
it's
Nicola.
All about technology now.
All about the technology. So let's talk about this survey by PayPal. More than half of shoppers will quit at the till because they can't pay by their preferred method.
Yeah, we spoke to about 2,000 businesses and consumers, and that's what we found. I think the gap between how consumers are wanting to pay and how small businesses are actually keeping up with those payment choices was what surprised us the most. And in the last 12 months, you know, consumers are just moving much more towards contactless and shopping on their mobile phones, which is what we expect from those big high street retailers. And it's just the gap between how small businesses are keeping up with that is really noticeable.
I mean, looking at the statistics from the survey, 3 in 10 customers are more likely to use websites or services where they don't have to enter card and address details every time they shop. Nearly a fifth have started to use click and collect, and nearly 1 in 10 have started to make purchases with a mobile wallet on their smartphone. Let's test this with our studio co-presenter today. Ben, does that resonate with your own shift from cash into a card culture?
Yes. I mean, I did for a while put my card onto my phone for Android Pay. Although there is Apple Pay as well, just
yes,
put it out
that's
there.
Okay.
And I didn't like the idea of it, how easy it was to sort of get access to the card, I think. Although obviously there's a passcode into my phone, I still felt it was a bit insecure in that respect.
That's a key point, actually, Nicola. I mean, there is a fear about the security of these kind of things. I mean, can you understand that kind of reluctance, or is it just consumer lag before we actually move into literally a cashless society?
Well, I think it's that balance of making things really simple, but also feeling protected. You know, putting in 16 digits of your credit card might feel more secure because you haven't got it stored on your phone, but trying to do that on a small mobile phone while, you know, squeezed on the bus or on the train obviously makes things difficult. And for small businesses, that used to be one of their challenges of how, you know, they convert the sale. People have actually come to their website, decided they want to buy, or as we see, go into their shop wanting to buy, and then because that payment method that they're expecting to use isn't available, they're abandoning that purchase.
As you said, a fifth of consumers surveyed cited they most frequently buy goods or services online using their smartphone, yet the majority of businesses admit their website isn't easily usable on a smartphone. Hannah, thoughts on yourself and your own patterns of purchasing?
Well, it depends what I'm trying to buy. Because, talking about purchasing last night, I was actually searching online for my brother's 21st birthday present. I'd mostly do birthday present shopping online because you can see a more variety, but I've never shopped online on my phone. That one is new to me. I've never done that. I mostly do that one on my laptop. So yeah.
I mean, Nicola, this survey obviously relates to small businesses and so on, and the way in which they can adopt easy ways to take advantage. In terms of the way the country's shifting, are small businesses getting the PayPal habit, shall we say, and actually accessing details in terms of how people can actually pay?
Absolutely, and I think even offline PayPal obviously was originally for making it really simple and safe for consumers to buy online. But what we see is actually now we've got, you know, like a contactless card reader called PayPal here that taxi drivers, personal trainers, you know, if you have a market stall, you're a plumber or electrician, that you can take with you relatively easily around and get paid with contactless, you know, the latest technology, and not have to deal with, you know, walking around with lots of cash or waiting to pay that check into the bank. And so it's also about making it simpler for the businesses and, you know, obviously the consumers and customers that they're serving.
Is there a website that people can go to find out more details, or if small businesses are sort of saying, well, this is all well and good, but we'd like to find out more information?
Absolutely. If you go to paypal.com /UK, you'll see all the, there's a business page with everything from invoicing to PayPal here to how you accept payments on your website. So really just trying to make it simple for small businesses to expand the amount of payment methods that they can use.
Are you a PayPal person, Hannah?
Well, when it comes up online, if I am doing online shopping that's on a smaller site, not a well-known one, if the payment is by PayPal, I'm more likely to go through with it because I know it's safe than something else.
And Ben?
Yeah, I have done. Yeah, I've used it a few times. I mean, a lot of the time through some websites, I just input the card straight from through the numbers. But I mean, I have done PayPal before. Obviously, it's safer, securer. And there's sort of a better chance of getting your money
Nicola
back.
Nicola Longfield is Director of Small and Medium Business there, so it's wonderful. Nicola, if there were time, I'd love to find out how you shifted from maths and astronomy at the University of Sheffield to an MBA from Harvard Business School. It's a whole new world there. But for the moment, Nicola Longfield, have you had a reasonably interesting, finally, when we connected, thanks to the gods of technology, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Absolutely. Thank you very much for your time.
Well, hopefully you'll be able to join us again in the not-too-distant future and keep us appraised of the continuing shift. I'm still not sure about the cashless society, I have to say. Maybe we should go for tokens. I still think, Nicola, there's a place for bartering. But then again, that's probably what I would say in any case. Nicola Longfield, Director of Small and Medium Business at PayPal UK and Ireland. Many thanks indeed.
Thank you. I studied at the Sorbonne. Doctored in mathematics, I could have been a don.
So, Ben, I suspect, clearly being a Brighton supporter and a keen follower there, you're always fascinated to find out what our Newcastle United followers have got, you know, thinking about, etc. Unfortunately, I have to break the news, if you haven't already heard, that last night they did actually beat Norwich City, even though they were at one stage 3-2 down. Which is very sad, but yeah, hopefully to sort of put the... put the best brave face on that particular side of things, we can welcome top Newcastle United supporter and, of course, ace author Ian Lennox back to the programme. How are you, Ian?
Hello, we're all a bit hoarse after last night.
So we watched the game. Was it a case of, you know, did you think Norwich were going to do it? Do you feel now as though in Rafa you trust?
Well, we were 3-1 down, and I was sitting in the director's box, thanks to a friend, behind a contingent of Norwich guests. And one of them turned around to me and said, you should be 4-0 up. And I said, I know. And then eventually, of course, we got 2 goals in extra time to win it. But it's one of the most exciting games I've ever seen, really. And I remember the other one that springs to mind is the 4-0 down to Arsenal at half time, and we drew 4-4.
I won't mention the Sunderland game then.
Oh, no, don't mention the Sunderland game. You always got to pour water on me for.
It's our way in.
It's like having a nice warm bath and you come with a cold bucket of water.
Listen, there are those of us who had to cope with the 3.
Anyway, months. I think Sunderland aren't doing very well, are they?
No.
I think there was a when our last game of last season, some of the Sunderland fans hired a plane with a banner on it, making jokes about Newcastle, and I think there'll be some Newcastle fans probably doing that by Christmas, the way it's going.
Oh, I remember He Who Laughs Last.
Exactly.
So, Ian, we've got to ask you, given that you wrote a book about football corruption in the fictional setting called The Net, Sam Allardyce's latest shenanigans, is it a case of, well, he learnt it all from Mike Ashley? Oh, did I honestly say that?
a lot of it seems still up in the air at the moment, but they've got tape of things. And I just can't understand what a man who's earning £3 million a year got himself involved in that sort of situation in the first place. Or is he gone? It's just extraordinary to me. And, we'll have to wait and see what eventually happens. But, there's been lots of rumours about football and bungs and things like this, and there's been books written about it. From 30, 40 years ago, you know. I mean, there was a huge scandal in the late 60s when I think bookmakers were bribing players. And there's one famous player who had been, you know, given some money to lose a game. And apparently he surprised one of his opponents by saying, you lot are so bad, we're still going to win this. Of course, the other player didn't know what he was talking about.
Yeah,
and then there was the scandal in the 70s with the Daily Mirror and... allegations against Leeds.
Let's just hold it momentarily, because Hannah Brown from Harwich, of course. I mean, are you at all interested in football? Or is it a case of this Sam Allardyce impact has had as much on you as Richard Fitzwilliam's talking about Prince George has had on other sort of presenters?
Well, I don't follow football particularly, but I do follow, like, when these big scandals or things come out, you know.
You're a journalist.
Yeah.
No less, exactly.
I try and keep up with some of it. But
finger on the pulse.
Yeah, I try. But the general match to match, I don't know a lot about unless my boyfriend happens to tell me.
And he supports which particular side?
He supports Chelsea.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Well, we'll
swiftly move on.
Exactly. It's going so well, you know, to that sort of moment. You think, oh, Lord above, you know, there was I sort of just about to say, like, Hannah, for your brother, you can actually give him a dedicated name check on Siren FM. I mean, what could you say?
If you'd said Manchester City, we'd have had you on next week.
If it's any consolation.
And the week after.
Well, that makes two Man City fans then, doesn't it?
Oh.
I was going to say, if it's any consolation, my granddad's a Newcastle United fan.
So. Not for me, but you might find some sort of solace in that particular area. And as we need to actually find out about first-time buyers ignoring Brexit scaremongering, as we actually head up to speak to Charles Hairsnape, Managing Director of Mortgages at Aldermore. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, Ian Lennox?
Yes, I have. Very enjoyable.
Yeah. Are you around in the second part of the programme to join us shortly, maybe around 9:15 or 9:30, to sort of have a brief chat about your recent European sojourn?
Yes, okay, fine. Yes.
This is good. This is what we like to hear, and you know, we can say that within this very show, Ian Lennox will return. Almost think it's become a financial reporting program that we've been doing as we head off from discussions earlier vis-a-vis PayPal and accounts and paying at the till, not paying at the till, and so on. We're now actually on to another important financial aspect to deal with scaremongering related to Brexit and how first-time buyers have been ignoring this, which is good news. And we're delighted to actually welcome to the program to discuss this and more the Managing Director of Mortgages at Aldermore, Charles Hersnate. Good morning, Charles. Good to touch base with your good self. Now, this particular aspect, every week the media report on widespread uncertainty in the housing market. Post-Brexit, there seems to be even more negative stories on just how hard it is now for first-time buyers. But this new research that's been commissioned by Aldermore has revealed a number of perspectives. Prospective first-time buyers planning to get on the housing ladder, that's remained pretty much the same. Was that what you were expecting, Charles?
Well, we weren't too sure, actually, because a lot of the market sort of, you know, chatter is around Brexit having an impact on first-time buyers. But we surveyed over 1,000 prospective first-time buyers, both before and after Brexit, and we found hardly any change, which we found extremely positive. The desires and plans of prospective first-time buyers actually is as keen as it ever was. That said, there were some notable feedbacks where 40% of those people thought it was extremely difficult to get on the housing ladder. And in the main, they were kind of citing the deposit issue as the biggest single source of difficulty.
Well, we've got three fine folk in the studio who I'm sure in the not-too-distant future may be considering getting on the housing ladder. First of all, Tessa Snott. Good morning, Tessa.
Good morning.
Tessa, are you sort of thinking about purchasing your own home, flat, maisonette or something? Is it something that you're sort of just beginning to think about?
Yeah, definitely. After third year, I'm definitely thinking about getting a house.
So just about a year and a bit to go for it from that perspective. Are you frightened by Brexit, then? Do you think that's...
I don't know, because obviously there's mixed views, and I think it's a bit of both, really. It could either go either way.
Okay.
I think we've just got to see.
Ben, likewise. So you're also sort of thinking, yes, well, it's interesting. If only 15% actually said they're planning to buy a flat or a maisonette. 3 in 10 respondents looking to buy either a semi-detached house or bungalow as their first home. 1 in 5 don't know.
I don't know about buying yet. I think at the minute it's obviously rent really. I think buying's probably for about 5 years' time. I don't know. It depends where I go. Okay. Depends what I do after uni.
Okay. And Hannah?
I think it depends how much money I start earning once I've got a job.
Because
I do want to obviously own my own home one day. But
I mean, Charles, is that sort of typical of the sort of folk in their early 20s, late teens, etc., in terms of the sort of viewpoint? And is it something where you'd say, it's all right, it's going to be okay?
Absolutely. I mean, the world's slightly changed where people have a more relaxed attitude and I think a more positive attitude to renting. There's nothing wrong with that at all. And people are generally leaving house purchase slightly later on until their income has become more established. But also, more notably, they've had the chance to save a deposit. And interestingly, in our survey, about a quarter of the people we surveyed, they were going to use, interestingly, the bank of mum and dad to help them support the deposit, which, you know, if you've got a bank of mum and dad that can do it, that's extremely useful. But that is an increasing source of contribution to deposits.
What advice would you actually have to give to first-time buyers who are actually struggling, you know, listening to this, thinking, oh, we thought it was going to be okay a year or so ago, now we're doomed?
I don't think we are doomed at all, frankly. I mean, you know, the good news is that, you know, interest rates, mortgage rates for customers are at an all-time low, which is really, really encouraging. And so I think that's a good time to buy if you have the deposit and you want to buy. It's a choice. The key thing for me, though, is, you know, is around affordability and making sure that you get the best possible mortgage deal you can. And unless you know exactly what you want, I would always recommend seeing an independent mortgage advisor to help you navigate the marketplace. It's really quite complex because of the variety of deals that are out there.
Okay. Tessa, any questions you'd like to put to Charles about, I suppose, anything really? He's a very amenable soul, I mean, life, the universe, etc., but primarily this particular topic.
Yeah, have you found that since sort of we voted to leave, that there's been, I don't know, the housing market has declined a little bit, so there's not been as many people looking for houses at the moment or trying to get on the property ladder?
Yeah, I think it's slightly the other way around, actually. I mean, what we saw immediately around the time of the Brexit vote was a slight pause in the market where people were kind of waiting for a month to see what happened. What we found out is now people, you know, believe they need to just get on with it because it's so, you know, it's so far off and so uncertain what the impacts of Brexit will be, really. The key thing is the shortage of properties on the market. At the moment, the estate agents are reporting less stock in their shops for people to buy. And I think a number of sellers are kind of waiting to see how it goes. So what I would hope is that more stock comes onto the market to give potential buyers more choice, and therefore, yeah, that will help in terms of prices as well, keep them to a modest level.
And of course, Article 50 hasn't been activated as yet, so who knows? We could be having this conversation in a couple of years' time, 3 or 4 years' time. Who knows what could be happening? Charles, it's been lovely just talking with you this morning. Presumably, aldermore.co.uk is a darn good place to go to check out more information.
That's absolutely the prime place to go.
Well, you see, there we have it. You know, get that message across there. Aldermore, aldermore.co.uk. Charles, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Thank you very much.
We'll see you again shortly, no doubt.
Okay, thank you.